a scholarly old fellow showed up who lamented the fact that no one would be writing the history that would become legend. It turned out he was the dean of literature of a sort of underground university that had been eking along for centuries. And on the argument that he had two capable replacements for himself in the school and, due to his age and poor health, was expendable anyway, he could not be left behind by the MacTyler. Robert the Fox thought that very necessary, so that made 65. 18 outright, uncontestable ties had shown up in the contest the chiefs had arranged. And when it looked like blood would be spilled over it, Johnny gave in, and that made 83. He woke up Turl, who had been hitting the Kerbango pretty heavily since sunset and was lying like a mountain across the plane seats.
We have 83. The plane takes 50 cyclos, and 83 humans won't occupy that space or make up that weight. I want to make sure you do not object to 83.
Turl was foggy and sleepy.
The casualty rate of such a project is high. We have to make it appear that they are just training all winter when they are operating. So the extra numbers are fine. Why'd you wake me up for a silly question like that, animal?
And he went back to sleep. Johnny had culled another piece of Turl's project from this. Up to now, he hadn't any real hard data on Turl's plans. Praise all for Kerbango, thought Johnny as he went off. He had the historian draw up a roster of the Anguses and Duncans and all their parade of names, and sent them off in the night to hasten pell-mell to their homes and get heavy and light clothing and sleeping blankets, personal gear, and a few days' worth of food to tide them over until he could round up cattle. They must be back at dawn, and those who didn't have them borrowed horses, for in some cases it was a long ride, both ways. Johnny had a final meeting with the chiefs.
We've caused quite a row up here in the Highlands, and although the local mine site is 500 miles away, it would be a good thing now for your people to be quiet and undemonstrative for the coming year.
The English lord thought that was a very good idea. The chiefs agreed to it.
There is a distinct possibility that we will fail, and that I will never see you again and the group will be killed.
They brushed this off. Brave men always risked death, didn't they? And they'd not blame MacTyler. The bad thing would be not to try. That would be what couldn't be forgiven. In the midnight chill, Johnny talked to those who had not been chosen, thinking he would leave disappointment there. But he found the chiefs had already told them that when the mission succeeded, they would be a recovery corps in charge of policing and reorganizing England, Scandinavia, Russia, Africa, and China. And they were already scheduling study, training, and organizing to do that at the end of a year. And the non-chosens were wild with enthusiasm. Fergus was spokesman as he calmly outlined it to Johnny. It worked on a clan system, of course. My God, gaped Johnny. These Scots thought big.
Don't fret, MacTyler. We're behind you.
Johnny, exhausted, stretched out under the fuselage of the freighter, wrapped in a woolen blanket hand-woven in the tartan of Clan Fergus, and fell into a hopeful sleep. For the first time since the death of his father, he did not feel alone.